were narrowed down to 125 guys in the FedEx Cup playoffs, and a reminder that the best place to be tracking who is going to be advancing on to the remaining FedEx Cup events is the PGA Tour app. Go to the FedEx Cup tab and then click on the projected standings. You're going to get hole-by-hole updates on who's in and who's out. I'm not even sure how this is possible, considering I'm gaming the Callaway Epic Sub-Zero 3-Wood, and the thing is an absolute rocket launcher. But we're going to talk a bit more later in the show about the Steelhead XR Fairway Wood from Callaway and its recontoured Hawkeye sole. But for now, let's get to the podcast.
Let's be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. Wanted to take an episode to debrief on a recent trip a few of us took to the Sand Hills area in North Carolina. Played a few rounds at Pinehurst, and also snuck in a round at Mid Pines and Pine Needles, and a lot to debrief on. I know, again, these travel episodes are appreciated by some. Some skip these, so if you're not interested in hearing about golf travel, please move along, carry on. There's plenty of other episodes out there for you. But for those that do give us feedback on these episodes and do appreciate them, we thank you for that. So I'm going to give you a little preview of what is to come. So Big Randy was only able to join us for one day out at Pinehurst. So I wanted to get his thoughts on number two. He was lucky enough to play number two. So he is up first. We go about 10 minutes there, and then Brendan Porath from SB Nation was with me for the remaining 2 days at Pinehurst. We got to play courses 7, 9, 4, and then number two again. So wanted to get his input on that. And then afterward, I went and played Mid Pines and Pine Needles solo. So I'm going to debrief a bit on the amazing work that's being done there and kind of the eye-opening experience I had there. First, we're going to rave a bit about our experience at Pinehurst. We're pretty blown away, which I think you'll see here pretty quickly, about how much fun it was and the overall vibes of the course and all the courses and the overall resort. So awesome trip, amazing trip. We did not make it out to, there's a lot of courses, a lot of people came up with a lot of recommendations for Dormy Club, for Tobacco Road, for Southern Pines, for all kinds of courses in the area. Don't have enough time to get to all of them, unfortunately, but we're definitely going to go back to the area, and we'll definitely take you guys up on all those recommendations and appreciate people sending those in. But for now, let's get to Big Randy, then we'll go with Porath, and then I'll debrief a bit at the end. So thanks for tuning in. All right, first up, we're going to welcome in Big Randy. Randy, unfortunately, you were only able to join us for one day at number two, but I think you would say right off the bat it was definitely a worthwhile trip from Charlotte.
Yeah, for sure. It was, and by the way, thanks for having me on. This is my first time on the mothership in a while.
It has been a while.
Yeah. It was really cool. It was, you know, I was fortunate to be a part of it. I'd been to Pinehurst actually a couple times before that, had never played number two, but really liked, you know, it's just got a good feel, that little kind of small town of Pinehurst around the resort. You know, that's more my vibe. I kind of like, you know, the pines, the southern hospitality. It just, everything agrees with me. So I was really excited to get over there, and, you know, with the chance to play number two, you know, all the better.
But did anything surprise you from the golf course? I mean, you've been there before, you've watched opens on TV, but is there anything you walked away from that you were kind of surprised by?
I was, you know, I did not have a good range session before our round, kind of per usual for me. And so, you know, I was getting pretty anxious about, oh God, I'm going to be spraying the ball and all that stuff. And so I think what I was most surprised about on the walk over to the first tee, our caddy, who actually was carrying both of our bags, shout out John, he was like, you know, I had warned him, hey man, I've been kind of sideways. I hope this isn't too much of a, of an army march for you. And he was like, dude, you know, you just need one ball. We're going to find it. And he was exactly right. You know, as the round unfolded, I think what I was most surprised about was I could find my ball and I could play it. And really towards the flag, you know, all but maybe two shots, you know, I could play it in the direction right at the flag. So that was, you know, for a double digit handicapper such as myself, that was a very pleasant surprise. That was awesome.
I think John picked up our bags and was like, felt they were pretty heavy. And I didn't even say to you, you don't need to bring more than one ball out here. And you're like, well, I think I might bring a couple more just in case.
Yeah, that was the discussion. I'm like, you know, hey, please let me know how I can lighten this bag. And yeah, he was like, dude, we can get rid of like all these balls. You just need one. I'm like, I don't know, man. you didn't just see that range session I put together. But yeah, he was exactly right. It was great.
Were there any stretches on the course that you found like the most memorable or some of your favorite holes out there?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought, you know, for whatever reason, kind of going out number four and then coming back five really stood out to me. I can close my eyes and picture that view from 4T, long par four. I think it kind of captures everything Pinehurst is about. Difficult hole. I made a big number. But I thought, you know, for whatever reason, those two holes – really stood out to me. And I think the other, you know, kind of number one green, you know, your first kind of, oh my God, yeah, these are the green complexes on number two. That stood out. And then coming home 18 with the clubhouse there, I'd walked past that a few times before, but to finally kind of get to play up and complete the round there, that sticks out.
What is after playing it, what is your way of playing a shot from around the green? I know it's going to vary, but do you have an overall, are you saying let's chip this? Are you reaching for the putter? What's how are you playing from off the greens?
That's a great question. So I started out, I was giving Pinehurst a lot of respect. So I started out, you know, keeping it low, trying to get cute with like hybrids around the green, taking putter from, you know, 8-10 feet off the green. And it wasn't great. It wasn't terrible. You know, certainly you can play that shot. And then towards the end, and I think my score kind of had a little bit to do with it. You know, I wasn't scoring it that well, but I think there kind of midway through the back nine, I was like, you know what, screw it. I'm going to start. So I started, I took my 6-degree wedge and started just trying to really clip a couple pitch shots and play it more through the air, and I had much more success doing that. But I say all that, I you know, if I played it again another 10 times, I'm not sure that's the best way. But I think what stood out was you can really do whatever you want. You know, there are so many different shots and ways to play shots around those greens. That's what really, you know, made the round fun.
I think there was, I'm not even sure if we talked about this, but there's a poster somewhere in the restaurant there that talks about, it has like a picture of like 6 or 8 different slopes and the way that Donald Ross approached slopes or humps and bumps and you know, you kind of look around the greens and you think they're all kind of the same. And then I saw that poster before playing that for the second time and realized just how different every single green complex was and the slopes around the green and how much thought went into it. From Ross's perspective on, you know, the slope that is almost vertical that goes straight up a hill versus a subtle one or one that just has like a double bump in it and all these things. And I don't think I noticed it the first time around really, but it helped so much to see that sign and realize, wow, there's this much thought goes into every single bump out there. There's nothing like that happens out there that's by accident.
Yeah, yeah. See, that was cool. You guys, I know, got to play it a second time later that week. That's kind of how I left our round was, man, I'd love to get back out there and keep kind of experimenting and toying with different shots.
Because it felt possible. It didn't feel impossible, but like I think all of us that first round just kept getting tripped up doing dumb stuff. But it wasn't like, man, this course cannot be beaten. I mean, it's just such a I don't know. I was blown away by how fun the challenge was. That was my thing. We all kind of walked off feeling like we got our asses kicked a bit, but it was like the most fun way to get your ass kicked. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, is like, I was kind of deferential to the greens a little bit. Like, you know, in hindsight, I wish I would have grabbed the 60 degree a little bit more often earlier in the round, you know, open the club face up a little bit and really try to, you know, play that shot, even if it's not the most advisable. I think I was much more defensive. And I think visually that's kind of what, you know, you can be lulled into visually. Oh man, very intimidating shot, and kind of get psyched out, or at least I was.
Well, I started, when I was taking my 60 degree, I caught myself trying to talk myself into a certain shot by being like, all right, if I'm gonna nip this wedge, I'm gonna land it on this like 1 foot wide upslope, and then it's gonna have spin. So when it gets on the downslope, it'll hold the downslope and then trickle down to the hole. And I, after blading like two of them, I was like, "Do you actually hear what you're telling yourself? Like, you are not capable of these shots." And from then, second time around, I was grabbing putter, man. I grabbed putter from, and that's just kind of I went full Keimer. And once you kind of commit to that, I think. You know, you're limited. You can get tripped up and make double bogey so fast. One bad chip, chip over the green, it's double easily. And, you know, I kind of just eliminated the double in that regard and just started putting things, but to each their own. But
yeah, I made the comparison on Twitter. Maybe some folks saw it, but kind of my best way to describe playing, it's almost in baseball terms, right? You watch a baseball game and they'll describe, you know, facing a certain type of pitcher. Guys can have a really comfortable 0-for-4. And I felt like, you know, that kind of described my round. And it's like, you know, you can feel like you're hitting it pretty well and, you know, you're not making terrible mistakes, but, you know, a little loose putt around the green, a chip that doesn't get executed quite right, and all of a sudden it's a bogey or a double bogey. And you don't really have the traumatic, oh my God, that was such a terrible miss. But it's, you know, you add them up at the end, it's like, oh, that wasn't a very good score. And I think that's the beauty of the golf course. You know, I'm not certainly architecture buff, some other people are, but reading like Alistair McKenzie, Spirit of St. Andrews, that's one of the things he talks about. It's like a good golf course should be very fair, very playable. It shouldn't be this gauntlet or this death march for kind of mid to high handicappers, and while having enough nuance to really challenge the really good players. And I thought Pinehurst, that kind of, for me, that's what I came away from number two thinking.
That was the biggest takeaway for me. Again, you and Brennan shot, I think, in the 90s. And again, in our group, we didn't lose a ball. And I've said this like five times, but that just blows my mind how we didn't look for a ball once. And how, you know, there's definitely sufficient tests, but without having to hunt for your ball all day. So, yeah, challenging to all players, and especially some really nuanced challenges to the pros and all the, you know, the tournament competitors that play that course. It speaks to the volumes of the quality of that course. But you did get to stay a night with us in the Villas. What was your takeaway with the vibe in the Villas?
Yeah, that was sweet. You know, it's just. I mean, it's awesome.
We didn't fill it out enough. We needed more people.
No, that was the thing. We didn't really take advantage of it. But
we got to see it. We know when we come back what we need to blow that place out.
Yeah, I'd love to go back and do it right. I mean, those Villas beg to be, you know, you got to do those properly. Big card table, big screen TV. I mean, you got to pop some beers, maybe play some cards, watch a game at post round. And we just didn't have the manpower or really the time or resources to do that. But yeah, the Villas were sweet.
Next time around. So, well, we were sorry to have to say goodbye to you then and now as well. We're going to get here shortly. I had a conversation again with Brennan Porath, who had a bit of extra time. We spent 3 days there. Phil was only able here to join us for one, but, Randy, thanks for sharing your thoughts and thanks for coming along. And like we said, we're going back there. As soon as number four gets renovated, we're going back.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to it.
Before we get to Brendan Porath, let's take a quick minute to hear from Callaway Golf, the makers of the number one fairway woods in golf. So by now, I'm sure you've heard of the latest fairway wood from Callaway, which is a supercharged version of a name you are already familiar with. It's a new Steelhead XR fairway wood, and with the recontoured Hawkeye sole and explosive face cut technology, Steelhead XR is longer and more versatile than ever. I'm blown away by the fact that there's another three wood in this collection of, because I mentioned in the intro, I'm gaming the Epic Sub-Zero three wood, and I've never hit a three wood more consistent or further in my life. The thing just shoots missiles up into the sky. So now I'm curious as to what this Steelhead XR is capable of. You can go, it's available now, so go get it. Go hit it for yourself at your nearest golf shop today. Callaway, the number one fairway wood in golf. All right, next we're welcoming in Brendan Porath. Brendan was the only one that was capable of the group of joining me for all 3 days that we spent at Pinehurst. BP, how you recovering? You sound a little rough on your end.
Capable, man. Yeah, I soldiered through it. You know, 3 days of golf was so hard. But yeah, I'm actually under the weather now. I came back to a wife that was kind of out of patience and had no time for my shit. And a couple sick kids who promptly got me sick. It was kind of like the harshest possible reintroduction to the real world. So I'm here, but I'll get through it. You know,
you're so brave. You know, that's what I admire the most about you. But I think, you know, with the busy family life you have back home, I would imagine you could have. There's not many people that could have appreciated those few days away in at Pinehurst as you could have.
Yeah, I mean, it was perfect. I told you a couple times, like, it was kind of like a cannonball run to get over there from Charlotte. You know, like the Monday after a major can be hectic. Sunday night, Saturday night, you know, we're late nights. You're writing through the night. You're working on stuff. And Monday morning, I'm checking out. I'm hustling to get out of there. And then, like, as soon as I got there, I thought I was kind of out of energy. As soon as I got there, it was just kind of like, you know, it's corny as hell to say, but it's like invigorating. You know, just kind of just taking it all in. Place you've heard so much about. And then kind of see it and walk on the property for the first time and walk out on the porch, look over kind of that whole scene, like the putting green, the number two tee, the 18th green at number two. I was just like, I didn't expect to play well. I didn't play well. but it was really cool to kind of carve out those 3 days, even and wedge them in right after work and then before the family life.
I think we had so much going on, like you said, for the PGA Championship week that it didn't feel like imminent. It wasn't like a big build up to it. It was like, well, we're going to tack this on to the end. And, you know, we were both just kind of struggling coming into that. But yeah, you're exactly right. Once we got there, I was like, oh, this is really going to happen today. This is
totally.
I just never understood how. I've never been there before. My knowledge of Pinehurst is limited to what I'd seen on TV from number two. I just always wondered, like, how do you fit eight courses onto one property? Which we'll find out. There's only, I think, four at that initial, at where number two is, there's four courses, but still struggled with understanding how you could sprawl out that many golf courses across the property, then only to learn that there's like 40 courses within this Sand Hills area. And we got plenty of recommendations of other courses to play in the area. Yeah. We don't have unlimited time, unfortunately, but we arrived, and I haven't talked to Randy yet, but Randy is going to be the first part of the audio of this podcast. We arrived and played number two day of. What was I guess anything that surprised you about number two, or your initial reaction to playing number two for the first time?
Here's what I would say. Like, I'm not that good a golfer, as you can attest after 90 holes.
What? No.
I've been like adequate at certain points in my life, but I'm certainly not very good right now. And so you go to some of these, I've been fortunate to play some great courses, but you go to some of these great courses and it like doesn't really matter if you're, or much hyped courses, I should say. Maybe they're not great, but hyped certainly and expensive. You go to some of these courses and as a poor golfer, a mediocre golfer, it just kind of is, you know, it's beautiful, it's well-maintained, but maybe you can't appreciate kind of the hype or appreciate why it stands out from the rest. I thought, like, number two, I got my butt kicked. I got just crushed that first day. I was struggling to break 100. I did, but I mean, it was. I'll be honest with you. Like, I'm not usually that high, but yeah, I was struggling. But it was so, but just it was like enjoyable. I could appreciate why it was so great. I like you kept talking about how we didn't lose a ball. For like the poor golfer, it was still really fun. And I had just come off like a family trip to Kiowa. And Kiowa's beautiful and like fantastic in its own right. But like some of the other court, like I played a Nicklaus course there, and it's just like I was wild. I hit it far, but really all over the place. Not far, but I hit it pretty well, but it, all over the place. And it's just OB down one side and water down the other, right? Yeah. And it's just like you're giving away a dozen golf balls. So you can get some of that. And, you know, at number two, you'd never lost a ball. Like you could play out of the waste area most of the time. Sometimes you couldn't. Sometimes you're like against a clump of grass and you just had to come out sideways or wherever you could. But as like a poor to mediocre golfer, I could really appreciate why it was such why it was such an excellent course and championship test, and how, you know, it was just really fun. It was super fun to get your ass kicked, which is, I can't say I've really had that kind of experience on a golf course.
Yeah, and it's you know, a sign of a great, well-designed golf course is one that is going to be challenging and playable for a higher handicap player, but there's still a different level of nuance for a lower handicap player, or a different level of challenge. And I think this course epitomizes that perfectly. I mean, you can it's very playable tee to green. I mean, you can hit it pretty much where you want on the tee. If you go in the waste areas, yeah, like you said, sometimes it runs up against, you know, a clump of wire grass, but for the most part that you can play off that waste area pretty well, and it's the challenge is all hitting it in the middle of the green, and when you miss these greens, it is so challenging around them. So I kind of always viewed it from the outside as not maybe a bit gimmicky as far as what how challenging the greens are.
Yeah.
And how it just comes down to short game and getting up and down. After playing it, the more I realize is it emphasizes your ball striking, and you've got to hit it into the middle of the green. And once you do that, the course is so playable. Once you're there, the greens are still very slopey. They have beautiful contours to them, and it's such a great. They're not funky once you're on them. They just have these nice subtle shapes to them. And some putts are you know, breaking a foot, 2 feet sideways from 8 feet, but it's not like just humps and bumps that are really random. And I think I got a much more appreciation for the way Donald Ross designed the greens around the difficulty of the hole. Like the third green is the hardest one on the course, and that hole tips out at like 350 from the blue tees. And the next hole is 470 from the blue tees, and yeah, it's got one of the more benign greens. Like the greens match the shape and the difficulty of the hole. And man, like you said, I knew it was going to be hard. I did not think it was going to be that fun. I had so much fun playing that course.
Right.
Aesthetically, it's just amazing that the restoration that Coren Crenshaw did. I'm obsessed with that look now. And we'll talk a bit about number four, which is about to undergo that restoration. But man, I don't know. As soon as you finished it, I think we were both like, man, I can't wait to play it again. We were fortunate enough to play it twice. You play it once and you're like, I can do better. I can do so much better the second time around.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, you've played, like we said, I was exhausted. We were coming in, it was like 2 o'clock, and I did not play well. And normally I'm not enjoyable to play with when I'm not playing well or what I feel like as well. Like, I was still just kind of super chilled out and just taking it all in, having so much fun. Even, you know, I recognized it was an incredible opportunity, but it was still just, I don't know. I don't know what it was, but my attitude and kind of like the way I took it in was different than any other golf experience I've had. And I don't know, you expect, like, you know, those greens going into it are kind of so unique, but, and we've all played false fronts, played Donald Ross greens and played greens with false fronts and things like that. And I've putted on greens that are running like 15 and stuff like that. But just, there's no comparison to those, whether it's fall offs into bunkers or the turtleback, obviously the design. And I worked on a lot of like chipping the second time around, and I relished it the second time around. It was so fun. Like if I missed a green, even like on a par three or anything like that, I really enjoyed kind of chipping onto it and like the game of trying to find the right spot and just hold the green.
Yeah, and it's not that long, really. I think from the
Right.
one, it's a resort course, so they try to get you moving, and it was 5 hour rounds, I think, both times we played it, which is again usually a big deterrent. But man, for me, it was a casual stroll out there. Yeah, we got to wait a little bit, but man, I was in no hurry to get off that course, and I didn't want that experience to be over in 3 hours. But they do try to get you moving. So it only plays 63 or so hundred yards from the white tees, I think. But I mean, as much resort golf as they get out there, it's kind of necessary. But we took caddies both rounds, and I thought that was
Yeah.
totally worth it.
You have to. I mean, you have to. Just like the walk and the talk in between, it's like totally worth it. You take in more of the course when you're walking. You have those idle moments to look around and appreciate it. I think it's completely worth it.
And they were nails on the greens. Both caddies I had were so good on the greens, and
Yeah.
just helping you visualize some putts and stuff. So that's a must do, I
And it's a
think.
super versatile course like that because, like you said, number four was like 470, par four.
Yeah.
And then the next one is a par five that can play a comparable yardage. We know par is just a number, but it's super versatile in that way. Like I think even for the North South Senior Am, they had them playing vice versa. Like four was a par five,
Yep.
and five was a par four. Like it's just really fun and versatile like that for the lower higher handicap.
Yeah, and I think those that set that that 4-5 stretch is such an awesome stretch out there. It's kind of in its
Yeah.
own little piece of the property, but it is basically two par 4.5s. Like, I
Right.
crushed a drive on four and had to hit 4 iron in, and then coming back the other way in the par 5, I had 5 iron in. Like, it is essentially the same. They're two different holes, but are the same kind of level of par. They give you one so-called hard one and one so-called easy one. It does mess with your mind. It really does. I know pars. We've talked enough about it being a made-up number, but I just love too, like the rolling terrain between the holes, and you essentially can set up tee markers wherever you want. There's not like tee boxes even there, which kind of surprised me. That sixth hole is got like over 100 yards of just a big square where you could put tee boxes at any angle and any distance that you wanted. And I don't know. It just didn't seem like a course that was carved out. It just was like a, and I know it was the design of Coren Crenshaw for that restoration. It just felt like this natural rolling terrain. And man, it blew me away. I really wasn't expecting that much of it. Like I said, I was expecting to get my ass kicked, but just did not expect to enjoy it that much.
Yeah, a lot of great walks too. A lot of great walks from green to tee that are just kind of one piece of grass. Obviously, I love that where you're not kind of traipsing through the forest to get to the next tee. It just flows naturally from green to tee. It's pretty cool.
Anything else we missed from number two?
I mean, not no. I'm sure you've covered a lot with Big Randy, but just kind of can't emphasize the totality of the experience, kind of the whole experience being just so fun.
Yeah, well, you were also fortunate enough to get to stay with me in the villas. We had the Reese Jones villa. Shout out to Andy. And we I think we both had the same exact initial reaction when we saw it. It was like, we don't have enough guys for this. Like, this thing is
Yeah.
perfect for an 8-man buddies trip. And there's four rooms that are connected through this parlor. And there's like two queen beds in each room, and it like this parlor had two TVs, a table, like tables with books and stuff on them, couches, like a bar and a refrigerator, and rocking chairs on the outside, and a putting green just outside of it. It was like, if you had eight guys in that room, the party, first of all, would not stop after 36 holes, and it would have been an absolute blast. So next time we're there, we need to make sure we have a crew of eight.
Yeah, I wouldn't say we were super lame, but we did not do the accommodations justice. It was kind of like a quick 2-night, 3-day trip, but yeah, they know what they're doing in terms of how to set everybody up.
It was a scouting trip. Let's call it what it is. It was a scouting trip. We're going to be back. We played three other courses there. We played number seven, then number nine, then number four. I'm going to break them down in order that I prefer them. I think we were pretty much perfectly in line with this. I don't like to rate courses, but the Pinehurst course we played fell out pretty easily for me. Number two would be the first, of course. Then number four, then seven, then nine. Would you agree with that ranking?
Yeah, I'd be right there with you.
Okay. We didn't get to play number eight. It was closed while we were there. I know a lot of people were suggesting to play eight, and I hear the caddies say, like, number two is what brings you here, eight is what brings you back. Would love to get back out there when eight was reopened to go play. But number four, so four was an original Donald Ross that was renovated by Tom Fazio, I think in the year, around the year 2000. Reminded me, I think you even said it when we were playing it, like, I bet this is what Pinehurst 2 looked like before the restoration.
Yeah. I said that on like the third hole or something, just like Bermuda kind of throughout, you know, wall to wall, and not obviously not the kind of like waste area and wire grass and stuff like that. So
we got to see it. Now they're converting their greens from bent grass to Bermuda. So they had the greens were rather hairy for us. They haven't fully made the conversion yet, and they're actually going to, Gil Hans is going to do a restoration similar to create a landscape similar to that in Pinehurst number two. He's going to do this at number four. I cannot wait to get back and play that. That's going to be absolutely amazing because we both love the golf course. I thought it was a fantastic golf course, some really fun holes, wide fairways, tons of width and angles, all that good stuff. The greens were, like I said, were not in great shape. Otherwise, we zoomed around that golf course in like 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Right. Yeah, I love that. That was, it was like kind of a cooler morning relatively for that week. And like you said, the setup was perfect, and obviously Hans has done some incredible like restoration work. he's really become an expert at that. So, you know, seeing him put it back to what kind of that Sandhills look, what it should look like for that region, will be perfect. And it was weird. We really had so much fun when the greens were, they admitted up front, they were like, hey, they're a little shaggy, they're gonna be gone in like a month. We're kind of letting them go. Like, they didn't really kind of like trick you into that. They knew, they kind of said it right up front, like, hey, this is about to be ripped up in a month. We just want you to see kind of the setup and the bones of it. And obviously when you take out some of that Bermuda, some of that wall-to-wall Bermuda, a lot of that rough, it should be really cool because it's got a good bones that they're already working with it. And you loved it. I mean, you were kind of, you know, going crazy about it. You love the setup.
Oh yeah, like the 12th hole is a par 5 around, it wraps around the water. That was like a really great risk reward hole. That's like 550. It was only like 505, I think, from the blue tees or whatever we played it at. It's just some really, really good holes, and it was perfect, like you said, to kind of get see that course first, because I'm dying to get back there and see it post restoration, because there's not a lot of courses that I've ever got to play that I've seen get remodeled or restored or renovated. Get to see him before and after, so that's going to be a great one to get back to. But speaking of Gil Hans, he's also building, and it's going to be in play as of next month, I believe, a new short course, a par 3 course, that's just, I don't know what the direction is. If you come off, you know, if you're facing 18 green from the clubhouse, just to the right of it in this big property where I think they stole a couple holes from the number 3 course, I think, but they essentially made a 9-hole par 3 course that also just looks like the perfect place to settle your end of round bets, or like a perfect nightcap place. And it's, you're right there on the property, and like you can probably zoom around that thing in easily under an hour. That thing looks absolutely awesome.
Yeah, I mean, we took it in from like the croquet lawns, you know, that line the clubhouse. We were kind of, you could see how the bones of it and the kind of the setup and the routing of it, but it obviously wasn't finalized and ready to be open. But that's the thing about Pinehurst. I thought there's like a lot of different purposes, even without the short course in yet. Like there's number two should just be like a total golf experience. I wouldn't advocate like going out and drinking a ton of beer on the course there. You know, I would kind of like try to play it and take it all in. And then there are other courses for that where there's like, you can get a ton of gambling and a ton of drinking going. And obviously the short course will set up perfectly for that, you know, where it's like end of day, everybody's a little loose, and kind of, you can go out there with your beverage and kind of settle bets. I know they were pretty fired up about it when they were down there, trying to get that in and out and up, certainly, because fall is such a big season for them.
Yeah, and right next to it, there's they're basically following the Bandon model here, and it's worked so well, and it's perfect, especially for me, when I look at a place for travel, I think of for buddies' trips, and why this place fits so well is, like, you have that similar to the Punch Bowl that went in at Bandon. There's going to be a huge, and I don't want to get the number wrong, but like huge acreage putting green that is just astronomical that's going in right by the short course as well. So I have a feeling this is just going to kind of end up being the evening hangout spot, that part of the property where after you're done playing for the day, you go putt around the huge putting green and go play the short course. But just great little ancillary things, you know, for a golf experience that you're looking for when you're out there with your buddies. But I think you and I were both kind of just impressed with the overall vibe too around the clubhouse.
Yeah.
The rocking chairs that just sit outside. We kind of finished the round. We finished almost each day or every day that we could with a drink out there in a rocking chair and watch the rest of the players come in. It's just a laid back Southern living kind of vibe that no one's in a great big hurry out there.
Yeah, I talked to like a couple friends who've been fortunate to play like some of the best courses in the world, and a lot of them came back to me like that porch at number two. There's like no better scene in golf, and just kind of no better post round spot in golf for a clubhouse. You know, we had just come in and we were kind of scrambling like, should we shower? Should we go into the village? What do you want to do? Because we're kind of on the clock. We kind of just like, well, like, what the hell? Let's just get a drink. We had played a 5-hour round. Like, what do we need to do? Should we get to catch a shower and get back? But we got our drinks, went outside and kind of just hung out on those rocking chairs in front of the Payne Stewart statue. I mean, it sounds kind of like cliche to say it, but I mean, it was like the best scene. It was completely relaxing. One of the better scenes I've ever experienced. It just felt good. You had just gotten crushed, shot a big number, and you just want to kind of reflect on the round and talk about it. And this is not, you know, me just saying nice things about Pinehurst. It was really kind of an experience I'll never forget, and I'm glad we got pictures of it. And, you know, my friends who are pretty picky and played a lot of courses corroborated that. They're like, that scene around that clubhouse, and they put in a new restaurant bar there. It's like as good as it gets, man. Just get your vodka or whatever and go out and just watch players play up to the 18th, watch the putting green. It's just, and we were there like right at dusk as the sun was going down. I'm really happy we have pictures of that because it was one of the cooler end of round experiences I've had.
Yep, just went by too fast, but like I said, we're coming back. Let's talk as well on courses number 7 and number 9. So these courses, you do have to leave the property, jump in your car, and I think they would shuttle you to these courses if you wanted to. But we jumped in a car, went to number 7, which had just reopened because they just did a greens conversion on these. They went from bent to Bermuda on these greens, and it literally has opened, I think, the day before we got to play it. Amazing to go play a course with almost no divots in the fairway and almost not a single ball mark on the green. I enjoyed number 7 a lot. I think it had a great look to it as far as the pine trees that frame it and the pine needles. That it is a different vibe than the courses that are on the actual property, like 2 and 4 that we played. But really, it's a Reese Jones course that was built on top of what was originally a Donald Ross 9-hole employee course. And it kind of has more of a country club feel than it does like a resort course. Like Pinehurst 2, and you know, you're just so many people around, like, and everywhere. This had a lot more private feel to it. Really enjoyed. We zoomed around that one pretty easily. Had a good time. My uncle joined us for that round, and had a really good time at that course. What was your overall impression of 7?
I enjoyed 7. I again was not playing particularly well, but I had a good morning there. I'd say like I mentioned there, how there's all these different purposes. It feels like different courses have different purposes. If you're there on a buddy's trip, I would feel like this is one where you kind of like get a bunch of games going, get a bunch of bets going. Maybe Wolfhammer. I think you're familiar with that. It's one of your something you guys have become big advocates of in the last month or two. But things like that, like where you're kind of maybe you do go out with like a case of beer, you know, depending on the time of day, but. I think that's kind of what it is. I didn't get like the country club feel. I thought it seemed like pretty egalitarian. Like it was the clubhouse was super unpretentious and simple compared to kind of the sprawl of you know where you have four or five courses for the resort. It was just kind of like this rural southern course. It felt like, you know, with this kind of really basic and unpretentious clubhouse. And then you get out there, and it's your typical Reese Jones setup, and you can have a little fun with it.
Yeah, I didn't mean to imply that it was pretentious in any way. It's just kind of quieter. It's just kind of set back.
Yeah, I gotcha.
In the woods a little bit, and kind of winds through a nice neighborhood. But yeah, some really, really fun holes out there. And when you're going to go on a trip like this to Pinehurst, you're not going to play number two every single time. And it's important that the I don't want to call them other courses, but the other courses essentially that you fill in with are at least more than adequate. You know, you don't want to be there, go to Pinehurst and you know, feel like you're playing a course that's not worthy of being played. Seven easily fits the bill on that. I mean, I think it's not going to demand that you play seven, but I have a hard time seeing you go out and not enjoy playing number seven if you're there.
Yeah, I think it's, you just got to know what you're going into. You can't get spoiled by number two. I'm not saying it's a bad course, but number two is just a different experience. So embrace number seven for what it is and make it, you know, whatever, kind of the fun games, buddies, you know, buddies matches and stuff like that. So,
all right. The final course we played was number nine. I'm not sure if I have the sequence of events right, but I think this was a somewhat recently acquired course from Pinehurst. It's a Jack Nicklaus course.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed number nine. I thought it had some really, really fun holes. The back nine was really great. But it is a Nicklaus course, and there was some very Jack Nicklaus green complexes, and I thought not as much, it didn't affect putting as much, but just some super narrow greens that didn't really fit the shot shape necessary for the holes, and a couple kind of screwy water holes. But overall, I definitely did enjoy the number nine course. But it just had a bit too much Nicklaus for me. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely, it was golden bearish for sure. I think it's the only course that will have bent greens there once they rip up number four and replace those greens. I had a good time there. I mean, I just, that was the end of a longer day to be sure. And I just kind of, you know, took it for what it was and throttled down a little bit and enjoyed it, got some beers and had a good time. I can't, you know, like I said, the green complexes did get a little Nicklaus-y, like you said. You know, it was funny that was, you could tell was its own kind of, had been its own course and setup, and it was acquired. I mean, that had kind of more of the hulking big clubhouse and one of these courses you come across in some of these southern states like this in the Pines. But yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a good solid afternoon round. I, you know, had several beers and posted another high number. But you know, it was funny. Like the starter was like, "These are the only bent greens. This is why you got to play it." Each course has like their own, like whether it's like the cart guy, the starter, they're all kind of advocating for why they're the best. I mean, number two doesn't because they don't need it. Number two did, but every time we went to a course, it's like, "Oh, this is the members' favorite course. Oh, this is the only one with bent grass. This is going to be the best condition." Like every time there was some guy, whether it was the starter, like a marshal, or like the cart guy, was always advocating for why their course was the best. And we played four different ones, but I thought that was kind of interesting. The guy at number nine was saying like, "Oh, this is the one with best greens, best shape. You know, this is the only bent here. You got to play it." So,
yeah, I did enjoy the greens. Once you're actually on the greens there, I did actually enjoy those greens a lot. But again, not saying that this isn't. I don't like ranking courses because I always feel like whatever you put last sounds like a course I wouldn't play again. I would definitely play there again. There's just a couple.
Yeah.
I'm not an architecture expert, but there's just a couple shots you hit. You're like, "Come on, man! Like that's not the shape of this green should be." But man, otherwise, yeah, I enjoyed it, and but that was a day. You know, we played seven and nine on the same day, and by the time you get to the back nine on nine, and that heat, I mean, it was hot. It was 95 degrees, 90%+ humidity. We were a little beat down after that, but man, that brings us to the end. Pretty much, we went back out and played number two, but we've touched back on that one. We didn't talk about your hole out. You did make a hole out on what hole was that on number seven?
It was 17.
17. Yeah. Hold out from 125 yards.
No. 16. Sorry.
16's a par 3, so it wouldn't be that.
Wait, no, 17. It was 17. Yeah, right. 17. Sorry, I was just looking at the wrong scorecard. 17.
You got it framed in your house yet? That big two with the double circle around
it? No, I think that was, I'm trying to remember. I've chipped in and made long putts, but I think that's the longest hole out of my rather undistinguished golf career. Yeah. So,
caught on video, too. That was awesome.
That was perfect. It was one of, like, three or four shots we captured. Another one was a shank that I took right over the camera that was on the front of the tee box.
I meant to chop that up and post that, because if people are going to see your hole out, they need to have seen what the rest of the week looked like as well.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not here to – I'm not, you know, some cloak, smoke and mirrors kind of guy. Put it all out there. I'm happy to have my game roasted, as you'd say.
All right, man. Well, man, I hope next time – I mean, I want to see it next fall. I think four is going to be renovated. I'm ready to go back there once that happens, and I want to play eight especially. And I want another shot at number two. Part of my soul is buried under that 18th green, I think. But, man, that was kind of blown away by – A, how many other courses were recommended in the area? I'm gonna spend a few minutes here at the end talking about some other courses I played, how many more I do want to play. But I mean, the Sand Hills area, I don't think I fully understood the vast nature of the different kinds of courses and how many great courses there are in that area. And I think I got more recommendations on courses than I was able to check off. So
yeah, I'd read a couple books on Sand Hills, like growing up and stuff, and knew that it was kind of this perfect golf, the home of golf, so to speak, home of American golf. But it's really kind of mind blowing when you're down there to figure out like all the options you could have. Hey, can we talk real quick about your round at number two?
Yes, we can.
Minus Randy. You were just talking about your soul being buried at the 18th green.
Yeah.
So Solly's like maybe the greatest waste bunker player ever at number two. He wanted to go in the waste bunkers more than the fairway, I think, because every time he did, he'd send a laser to like 3 or 4 feet from the waste bunkers. And he started birdie on the second round of second time around number two, right?
Yeah.
Birdie on the first two holes, like complete darts from the waste bunkers. It was ridiculous.
I threw an 8-iron to about a foot on the first hole and then one to about 6 feet on two. I birdied both of those, and I thought I was going to break the course record. I mean, I played it back, too. Like, it was, I don't know, I was vibing, and I hit like a...
Well,
go ahead.
You went out in 34, right? Yeah. And we were like walking to the 10th tee, one of the caddies like, dude, he should be like 32. He should be like 4 under. Like 34 was kind of like the worst you could do almost the way you were playing.
Yeah,
right?
I had irons into both par fives. I didn't birdie either one of them. And number four is 475 uphill into the wind. And I just like murdered a drive and murdered a 4 iron to 20 feet. And it just felt like, all right, this is the day it's finally going to click. And it did. I mean, I got a horrible break on 11 and my ball came to rest on a loose branch in the bunker. You hit in the waste bunkers enough, you're going to get bitten. So I can't act like I was aiming in that bunker, but I made double there. And then I got it back with the birdies. I was 1 under standing on 15T and then just went full Adam Scott. I bogeyed the last four holes, just a slow bleed, just one bad shot per hole. And once you miss on some of these holes, like there's no easy way to recover. And, it was painful. It was really painful. I hate finishing around like that, but man, that was some of the most fun golf I've ever played.
Yeah, you should be proud of it, man. It was the last four holes of a 90-hole jaunt in 3 days. And, I mean, you went out in 34. So, I mean, what the hell? I would be happy with the 75. I know the bogey, bogey, bogey finish is something that will bother you forever, but I had to bring it up because I know Big Randy wasn't there for that second round, but... It was kind of impressive. It was a show to watch you play from those waste bunkers.
Well, that's what also just helped me add to the experience. And it's not, you know, it's not about the round or the number, but it's about getting to experience the course when it felt like there's something on the line, like for me personally, and kind of going through the challenge and the thought that goes through these holes and the strategy of where to leave it and what pins to take on and, you know, what holes to just fire at the middle of the green. Like, you just get so much more of appreciation for it when your game is there and you get to kind of walk through that. So that's why it was just so top of the notch for me, was just you get to see it in that light. And from that perspective, it was so much fun. So yeah, I'm bitter about how it ended, but overall, man, that was one of the more fun rounds of golf I've played. So
yeah. All right. I'll let you go. I had to bring it up though.
I know.
We didn't address it. We needed to.
I know. Needed to be spoken about, but hey man, dude, get some rest. Like, you don't sound too good. I know you're having withdrawals over there from, from Pinehurst, but we will do it again. I promise. Yeah, I know you're probably just sitting around sulking about this, but
I know. I'll get back there. It's an easy drive from DC.
That's true. I'll be there. That's true. You might want to start laying the groundwork with your wife. So
yeah, I'll need to do that.
All right, DP. Right. Thanks for the time, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you, Chris.
All right, that's going to wrap up conversation on Pinehurst, but as mentioned in the intro, wanted to debrief a bit on the two rounds I squeezed in at the end at Mid Pines and Pine Needles. This was only a 15-minute drive from the Pinehurst Resort, and as I always try to do when going to an area, I love playing, you know, at a resort like Pinehurst, but also seeing what other courses are in the area. I don't think I had a full appreciation for the depth of great golf that was within a shouting distance of the Pinehurst Resort. I think this is just even more of a selling point for taking a trip to the area. I don't really see it as necessarily competition for Pinehurst or any of these courses. I think the way it works is, and speaking to a lot of people in Scotland about how they feel about surrounding courses, if the most part people have an appreciation for what that brings to an area. It brings more people to an area. It brings just more tourism in general, and it helps fill tee times at these courses. The fact that, you know, you can, I hate saying check off, but you can check off so many different experiences and just, you know, with barely even having to jump in your rental car. So Mid Pines was the first place I went, 7:05 tee time on Thursday morning. I had a recommendation from a friend of a friend. He heard I was going to Pinehurst, and he was just like, shook his finger at me, like, you have to get to Mid Pines. Like, you do, like, promise me this, Mid Pines. And, like, when we said goodbye, finally, like, pointed at me, he goes, Mid Pines, make it happen. I didn't, like, fully know what he was talking about, didn't do a lot of research on it intentionally, and wow, I was blown away. I mean, Pinehurst was incredible, but you know about Pinehurst, so you know about number two, you've seen it on TV. Mid Pines, I knew next to nothing. Man, you talk about a vibe when you pull into this place. So it's a 1921 Donald Ross course. Regrettably, I never got to see it before the recent restoration. So Kyle Franz was in charge of the restoration. He was a shaper, I believe, or it was a member of the core Crenshaw team that did the restoration at Pinehurst number two. And he had found some old photographs of the original Donald Ross layout. Took photographs of the current, how it currently stood. So it was restored in 2013, but before that, had pictures from recently before that, photoshopped in some what his proposed plan was for the restoration, and then was hired to actually do it. And I mean, man, I can't describe. I wish I could have seen it before to even have more appreciation. When I do finish my wrap-up post on it, you'll see pictures from before and after. Unbelievable. I mean, the whole look and the I don't know how to describe the look, but kind of taking the rough out of a course, working in waste areas with wire grass strategically into it. It's not like it's just straight lines up and down the fairway, and you know, it's not, it's got appeal to it. It's got contour to it, and it's got, you know, it gives you a little bit of depth, I guess I should say. So like, if you have a 140-yard shot, there's a chance, like, along the left side, they're going to be bringing in the waste area kind of up near the green, kind of into a bunker. And yet, yeah, it's not just like perfectly straight lines along the side of it. I don't really know how to describe it without showing a picture as well, but it's just unreal. It just has the best look to it, and it's almost like you don't want to hit it over there to mess up the perfect look of it. But yeah, it's just an unbelievable experience, kind of that the way the whole course kind of sits within all these huge pines. Again, it's an old course, so these trees are huge, and there's pine straw all over the ground. And I was again blown away. The first two holes are just so aesthetically pleasing. And I was playing really early in the morning, and there was dew on the ground a lot, so my pictures didn't turn out even that great. But man, I mean, it was a walk that it ended way too quickly. I think I finished in 2.5 hours playing by myself, and I was like purposely trying to play slow, taking pictures just because it was that good. I think you could easily walk it in 3 hours on your own. There's a guy in front of me that walked it in like 2:30, even shorter than I made it around. But man, just blown away. I got to speak with Blair and Kelly, who manage the resort, and I got to actually play a few holes with them across the street afterwards and just talk to them about everything that's going on there. And I sat in that clubhouse and just actually did some work for about 4 hours. But that vibe is like exactly my tempo, and I was just blown away at the green fee rates. I mean, during summer for Thursday through Sunday, it's $145, and Monday through Wednesday, it's $125. Like, after playing it, if you'd have told me it was $400, I would have believed you. I mean, I legitimately could not believe that pricing point. And I know it varies based on the month that you're there, and I wasn't there in prime season. Summer is a little bit outside of prime season, but unbelievable. I mean, I would check out their website too. There's a lot of information on the restoration there. And then across the street, so with Mid Pines and Pine Needles are essentially one mini resort, if you will, and sister courses, and I don't know what the size of the membership is, but it's mostly available to the public, yet they do have members as well. And I actually was lucky enough to play with a member across the street in the afternoon. Soon, a totally different course. So the Pine Needles sits a lot higher on a higher piece of ground and uses elevation a bit more than Mid Pines does. I breezed through Mid Pines, but some of the holes on that back nine, especially, there's a par five fifth, there's a par four 14th. It's just so hard to describe a golf hole without showing it, saying in pictures. That goes up like this really tough par four 14th, and then you drive up the hill for this par five 15th that goes down the hill. That again framed by the pines, but it's plenty wide enough to just kind of swing away. Amazing golf hole and some truly memorable holes out there. Hit a lot of different clubs, it tests a lot of different clubs in your bag, and I just can't say enough about how aesthetically pleasing it is and how perfect the greens are. And yeah, the guy that played in front of me, I think somebody said that he goes and plays it every morning at 7 a.m. And I was like, that dude has got life figured out. But across the street at Pine Needles, like I said, a lot more terrain, a little bit more elevation changes, and just a bigger feeling. The course is just, it's wider. But Kyle Franz is still actually doing the restoration on that course. And he can still be seen on the grounds. And I was lucky enough, yeah, like I said, to play with a member. And then Kelly and Blair came out and joined us for a few holes. So just kind of picked their brains on you know, customs around the place and, you know, their favorite parts of the property. And there's like a stretch of holes from 11 through 16 that just get away from all the houses. That is just like totally like secluded and private, quiet golf that was a pretty special stretch. But got a little fatigued finishing that round. Didn't finish it very well. But, man, just to get that 36 holes more of Donald Ross course, that just this place that is extremely historic vibe, yet had been, you know, the restoration that brings you back to that, you know, kind of original, how Donald Ross had pictured it. I'm still looking for more information on what happened between the original layout and what happened before Kyle came in and restored it. And again, I didn't get to see it before the restoration, but man, it was just seeing the pictures, I'm like, well, I'm so glad I got to see it afterward. It's phenomenal. And everyone that pointed me in this direction, appreciated that, because that was quite the experience, and I think certainly a must play if you're visiting Pinehurst or going to the Sandhills area. If you're not, I preferred Mid Pines over Pine Needles. Again, it could have just been the order at which I played them, the time of day I played them, and my fatigue level, but Mid Pines is 100% a must play. And if you're there, Pine Needles is across the street. It'd be a crime not to play it. That's actually why I stuck around too. It's like, I can't justify coming Mid Pines and not going across the street and playing Pine Needles. So, yeah, going to have more on this on the website. I already wrote up most of it, but I want to get the podcast out first. But just a lot of information and pictures about it. And again, we definitely want to come back to the area. I want to see Dormy Club. I want to see Tobacco Road. And I want to see number 8 at Pinehurst. I want to see number 4 after it's been restored. And I need one more crack at number 2, because it's still part of my soul is buried under that course. But man, awesome trip. Thanks to everyone that helped make it happen. And man, yeah, can't wait to get back to the area. Thanks again for tuning in. Thanks for everybody that sent in recommendations. And yeah, if you listen this far, the reviews have been dipping on the site, on iTunes, which again, I've been kind of all over the place and not been pumping out podcasts with the most regularity, but feel free to get back in there, iTunes. And I'm making sure I'm saying this at the very end at 58 minute mark or whatever, because only the diehards are listening this far. But you know, we could use a little bump in the rankings here. We gave away an epic driver once for like the funniest rating. I feel like everyone's just sitting around waiting for the next epic giveaway, which I don't know if we're gonna do again. So feel free to help us out there, and hopefully have some more travel stuff coming up in September. Trying to make my way up to Sand Valley, actually. That's the hope. But appreciate the feedback on all these, and hopefully speak to you guys soon. Thanks.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!
expect anything.